Chapter 33. Surrounded and hemmed in, as it were, by aggravations of all kinds, that when Mr. Tappettit, holding the horse's head, saw her come out of the house alone, such impulses came over him to decoy her into the chaise and drive off like mad, that he would unquestionably have done it, but for certain uneasy doubts besetting him, as to the shortest way to Gretna Green, whether it was up the street or down, or up the right hand turning or the left, and whether, supposing all the turnpikes to be carried by storm, the blacksmith in the end would marry them on credit, which by reason of his clerical office appeared, even to his excited imagination, so unlikely, that he hesitated. And while he stood hesitating, and looking post chaises and six at Dolly, out came his master and his mistress, and the constant mix, and the opportunity was gone forever. For now the chaise creaked upon its springs, and Mrs. Varden was inside. And now it creaked again, and more than ever, and the locksmith was inside. And now it bounded once, as if its heart beat lightly, and Dolly was inside. And now it was gone, and its place was empty, and he and that dreary mix were standing in the street together. The hearty locksmith was in as good a humor, as if nothing had occurred for the last 12 months, to put him out of his way. Dolly was all smiles and graces, and Mrs. Varden was agreeable beyond all precedent. As they jogged through the streets talking of this thing and of that, who should be descried upon the pavement but that very coachmaker, looking so genteel that nobody would have believed he had ever had anything to do with a coach, but riding in it, and bowing like any nobleman. To be sure Dolly was confused when she bowed again, and to be sure the cherry-colored ribbons trembled a little when she met his mournful eye, which seemed to say, I have kept my word, I have begun, the business is going to the devil, and you're the cause of it. Apostrophe there he stood, rooted to the ground. As Dolly said, like a statue, and as Mrs. Varden said, like a pump, till they turned the corner. And when her father thought it was like his impudence, and her mother wondered what he meant by it, Dolly blushed again till her very hood was pale. But on they went, not the less merrily for this, and there was the locksmith in the incautious fullness of his heart pulling up at all manner of places, and evincing a most intimate acquaintance with all the taverns on the road, and all the landlords and all the landladies, with whom, indeed, the little horse was on equally friendly terms, for he kept on stopping of his own accord. Never were people so glad to see other people as these landlords, and landladies were to behold Mr. Varden and Mrs. Varden and Miss Varden, and wouldn't they get out, said one, and they really must walk upstairs, said another, and she would take it ill, and be quite certain they were proud, if they wouldn't have a little taste of something, said a third. And so on, that it was really quite a progress, rather than a ride, and one continued scene of hospitality from beginning to end. It was pleasant enough to be held in such esteem, not to mention the refreshments. So Mrs. Varden said nothing at the time, and was all affability and delight, but such a body of evidence as she collected against the unfortunate locksmith that day, to be used thereafter as occasion might require, never was got together for matrimonial purposes. In course of time, and in course of a pretty long time too, for these agreeable interruptions delayed them not a little, they arrived upon the skirts of the forest, and riding pleasantly on among the trees, came at last to the maypole, where the locksmith's cheerful yo-ho, apostrophe apostrophe, speedily brought to the porch old John, and after him young Joe, both of whom were so transfixed at sight of the ladies, that for a moment they were perfectly unable to give them any welcome, and could do nothing but stare. It was only for a moment, however, that Joe forgot himself, for speedily reviving he thrust his drowsy father aside to Mr. Willett's mighty and inexpressible indignation, and darting out, stood ready to help them to alight. It was necessary for Dolly to get out first. Joe had her in his arms. Yes, though for a space of time no longer than you could count one in, Joe had her in his arms. Here was a glimpse of happiness. It would be difficult to describe what a flat and commonplace affair the helping Mrs. Varden out afterwards was, but Joe did it, and did it too with the best grace in the world. Then old John, who, entertaining a dull and foggy sort of idea that Mrs. Varden wasn't fond of him, had been in some doubt whether she might not have come for purposes of assault and battery, took courage, hoped she was well, and offered to conduct her into the house. This tender being amicably received, they marched in together. Joe and Dolly followed, arm in arm, happiness again. And Varden brought up the rear. Old John would have it that they must sit in the bar, and nobody objecting, into the bar they went. All bars are snug places, but the Maypole's was the very snuggest, coziest, and completest bar that ever the wit of man devised. Such amazing bottles in old oaken pigeon holes, such gleaming tankards dangling from pegs at about the same inclination as thirsty men would hold them to their lips, such sturdy little Dutch kegs ranged in rows on shelves, so many lemons hanging in separate nets, and forming the fragrant grove already mentioned in this chronicle, suggestive, with goodly loaves of snowy sugar stowed away hard by, of punch, idealized beyond all mortal knowledge. Such closets, such presses, such drawers full of pipes, such places for putting things away in hollow window seats, all crammed to the throat with eatables, drinkables, or savory condiments. Lastly, and to crown all, as typical of the immense resources of the establishment, and its defiances to all visitors, to cut and come again, such a stupendous cheese. It is a poor heart that never rejoices. It must have been the poorest, weakest, and most watery heart that ever beat, which would not have warmed towards the Maypole bar. Mrs. Varden's did directly. She could no more have reproached John Willet among those household gods, the kegs and bottles, lemons, pipes, and cheese, than she could have stabbed him with his own bright carving knife. The order for dinner too, it might have soothed a savage. A bit of fish, apostrophe said John to the cook, and some lamb chops breaded, with plenty of ketchup, and a good salad, and a roast spring chicken, with a dish of sausages and mashed potatoes, or something of that sort. Apostrophe something of that sort. The resources of these inns. To talk carelessly about dishes, which in themselves were a first-rate holiday kind of dinner, suitable to one's wedding day, as something of that sort. Meaning, if you can't get a spring chicken, any other trifle in the way of poultry will do, such as a peacock, perhaps. The kitchen too, with its great broad cavernous chimney, the kitchen, where nothing in the way of cookery seemed impossible. Where you could believe in anything to eat, they chose to tell you of. Mrs. Varden returned from the contemplation of these wonders to the bar again, with a head quite dizzy and bewildered. Her housekeeping capacity was not large enough to comprehend them. She was obliged to go to sleep. Waking was pain, in the midst of such immensity. Dolly in the meanwhile, whose gay heart and head ran upon other matters, passed out at the garden door, and glancing back now, and then, but of course not wondering whether Joe saw her, tripped away by a path across the fields with which she was well acquainted, to discharge her mission at the Warren, and this deponent hath been informed and verily believes, that you might have seen many less pleasant objects than the cherry-colored mantle and ribbons, as they went fluttering along the green meadows in the bright light of the day, like giddy things as they were. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.